Father Ted, and you are listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu Podcast. All right, we said cheers because we're all back again. And in this special episode of the Bunker Podcast, I'm lucky to be sitting here with the very first black belt on this podcast.
Oh, wow.
Mark, yeah, you're the first one. You're the first one. Mark Manalo, who is the owner and head instructor of NKS, which is Northern Karate School, which is both a karate school and now a new jiu-jitsu program, which has been around for, what, 3 years now, 4 years?
Oh, I would say, yeah, 4 years.
4 years.
Like, officially 4 years.
Yeah, and we're sitting on Mark's beautiful porch here in North York, just down the street from where I live, and as we become accustomed to doing sometimes weekly with our cigars and our bourbon. And, yeah, it's wonderful to have you, Mark. I've known Mark for...
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I've known you for, since the pandemic. So 5 years now.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And Mark, is one of my instructors, kind of indirectly. He's taught me a lot. He's allowed us to kind of, always visit and be gracious with his time and his knowledge, a good friend of Arthur's, a good friend of everybody in the community. And, I'm happy to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, to hear your story. So, as I ask everybody, you have kind of like a double kind of a story because you are first a karate, well, you're a coral belt.
I'm actually a red and white belt.
Red and white.
Karate, yeah.
So it's not called a coral in karate.
Yeah, it's it's a Xian belt, it's
mm-hmm,
called.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I've been doing karate since 1992.
Whoa. Okay.
91. I can't even remember because I was still a kid. But like 35 years now, I've been doing karate.
How old are you now, Mark?
47.
You're 47. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, 47 this year. Not quite yet.
Almost.
Almost. Yeah.
Okay. So you've been doing karate for most of your life.
Yeah.
When did you open NKS?
So I've been teaching karate since 98.
Mm-hmm.
So since I was a teenager, I was teaching. I opened my own location of NKS. In 2008, it was like a satellite thing. I was just kind of doing it on the side on my day off. And it just continually grew. And in about 2010, it was like I needed my own place.
Mm-hmm.
So then that's when I decided to pursue it, specifically having my own location.
So you were working out of another Northern Karate?
Yeah, I was working for my sensei. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, another Karate's
big chain.
I was
working with my sensei. I was working for and with my sensei.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the side, I was just doing with a friend of mine, Rene Villar, we were sort of doing like a satellite dojo twice a week. I would do one day, he would do the other day, and we just grew it and it until we needed our own place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he decided he was going to stay at our main dojo to be the head guy there.
Mm-hmm.
And and then I just ran with my dojo. That's the short story of that.
So you've had it there. So that location now, it's like
15 years.
2010. Wow.
15 years, 17 years sort of teaching my own students.
Mm-hmm.
And almost 27 years teaching.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So you were doing that for a long time, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course your wife is also.
Yeah. So she's a.
She's a black and white belt as well.
She's a red white belt. She just recently got a red white belt.
Oh wow!
She's been doing it for 22 years now.
Oh wow! Yeah. Was she doing karate before you guys met?
No, we met in karate.
Oh, there you go. Nice.
Yeah.
That's convenient.
Yeah. I knew I was going to marry her when I saw her first.
I bet.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, Kim is Mark's wife, and she's a wonderful human being. She's a wonderful person. So.
And she's taken up jiu-jitsu as well, and has fallen in love with it as well.
Yeah,
it's a family affair.
So how did you get in? So okay, so you were doing karate.
Yeah.
What was your first experience or like your first encounter with jiu-jitsu?
So I think like everybody else, so I got my karate black belt in June of 1998,
mm-hmm.
And I was already teaching as a brown belt. I was assisting class, and then I started teaching, part time. And me and my buddy, he's a jiu-jitsu black belt as well. A lot of the people who listen to this would know him. His name is Brian Fednishin.
Mm-hmm.
And we got our black belts like 6 months within each other. And we would work Friday nights. We would teach Friday nights. And just like everybody else, he was really into UFC. And I was into UFC as well, but not as much as him. And then we would just train like MMA every Friday night. You know, we'd finish teaching classes, close up the shop. Some of the students would stick around and Brian and I would just train. And this was in 2000. Oh, wow. And we would just train. We didn't know what we were doing. Yeah, we were like ripping heel hooks, you know, because we knew how to heel hooks. Didn't know how to do setups, just overpowering everything. And we had a little white TV, like a 12-inch TV with a built-in VCR.
Oh, nice.
So we would rent Pride tapes.
Yeah.
Right? Pride.
I remember.
And at the Queen Video, that was the only place.
We're both old enough for VHS, my friend.
Yeah. That was the only place that we could find. Like, he would go to Blockbuster because he could rent UFC tapes. And I would go to Queen Video because I had a job down there and because you could get Pride tapes. And we would just practice the moves that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We just practiced them. We didn't know what we were doing. Just like everybody. Just like the OGs of, you know, of BJJ here. We would just practice. We'd pop a tape. We'd see something cool and we'd practice it. And then we'd like roll for hours. So that was my first thing with jiu-jitsu. And there was really nobody teaching it at the time. Right,
so this is 2000, right?
Yeah, this was 2000.
Yeah, well, 92 was it? And so yeah, it's very early years.
And I took my first seminar with Jean-Jacques Machado.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
wow, where was that?
At ACMA. Oh, yeah, okay. Here at ACMA.
Wow.
Vito Brancaccio at ACMA. He was a blue belt already. He did a seminar with us because he's a part of our karate family. And so he was a blue belt and he was doing seminars and he said he was bringing Jean-Jacques Machado. So that was 2000. That was my
back first. Then, even being a blue belt was something because there was nobody there.
Yeah.
Like that was an achievement.
That's right.
Then.
Yeah.
It was like,
so he was the highest ranked I know.
Yeah, I knew. Of course.
Right?
Yeah.
And he invited us to his dojo, ACMA, All Canadian Martial Arts. And that was my first experience with a real jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu instructor. I was like already, you know, with Japanese jiu-jitsu, so I knew locks, standing locks and stuff like that. I was already introduced to it, but with like actual ground work, you know, with the guard and stuff like that. That was my first. And I rolled with Jean-Jacques. Obviously, I didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, he helicopter armbarred me. And that was it. I was like, Brian and I looked at each other and was like, we have to take this seriously, you know, and we kind of, not seriously, but, you know, we have to take this like... we have to learn this stuff, right? So we just continued practicing, took classes, you know, like reached out to Carlos Newton. Like I have pictures of this at my dojo with like that first class with Jean-Jacques. And reached out to Carlos Newton and did classes in his apartment.
Carlos Newton was back then, it was a Samurai Club, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. But he was like, we were in his apartment.
Yeah, I know. Like, I mean, that was, he was,
that
like
was
first,
he was coming, yeah.
Him and,
yeah.
And Joel and Terry Riggs.
Yeah,
all those
Omar,
guys were like the OGs of of like jiu-jitsu in the Toronto area, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Day,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So, you know, and then like we would just take seminars and then practice together, right? And Brian was a big boy. He was a big guy. And we would just practice together. And, you know, we did that for years because there was really nobody that we could go to, you know?
And like then, how many years do you think you did that for?
So,
approximately,
probably till 2-3 years,
okay.
Probably around 2005, I would say 2005. So about 5 years of just like no formal training, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like most 2005, I had a, so I already had a, like I had a kid 2002.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that took up a lot of my time.
Sure.
And then at 2005, I had to move back in with my parents and I found Rebellion,
mm-hmm.
which was Omar and Steve Lin's gym.
Mm-hmm.
So then that was close to my parents' place. So I was like, oh, perfect. Proper training now. So I started training there and then something happened. And then like, and then Steve was like, I'm opening my own place even closer to you. So I was training with Steve Lin for a long time, probably 4 years.
Oh, wow.
Steve Lin, he gave me my blue belt.
Nice.
Actually, funny story. I was trying to think of like things to say in this podcast. I got my blue belt twice.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the first time I got at a seminar, but I was like, by a very famous person, but I was like, I don't know, like I don't even know this guy,
That's how it
right?
was done though back
Yeah,
then. That's how it was
and I
done.
was like, and so, when I met Steve, and I said, he asked if I had experience. I said, well, I'm kind of a blue belt. And he goes, just wear your blue belt. If you were awarded it, you're awarded. But, being a karate guy already, I wanted to do it properly, right? So I'm like, at first class, I put my white belt back on, and and then trained with him for a couple of years until he awarded me my blue belt.
Interestingly enough, as an aside, just because you mentioned that, a couple of years ago I had gone to Greece. And in Greece, the jiu-jitsu scene is growing quite a bit in the big cities like Athens. But when you go out to the villages, it's small. Like, so I was
Well,
in
like
the,
here too, right? Still developing, but go on, yeah.
But there it's like, okay, it's even further back, right? So in the villages, so I went, like, my in-laws have a place in Nafplio, which is like south of Athens, really beautiful, picturesque place. And I found this little jiu-jitsu gym. But it wasn't a gym. It was basically like eight guys, well, maybe 10, who were renting out a local community center in the middle of a cornfield, right? And they had like the puzzle mats, right? And the highest belt there was a purple belt. And basically they were under, who was, they were under Jaculino, right? He's a
Gracie
big,
Barra,
right? That's right. And he, but he doesn't live there. And so they were like a satellite. He would only come in like twice a year, right? And he would
Grade
just
someone,
engrade them, right? And that's how it was. Like you said, like they would be training on their own,
which is
and they would be given their belts when the guy, when the black belt would come in from far
which is
away.
crazy. But then you realize how lucky we are, right? We're 2005, and kind of like Toronto is saturated with all these jiu-jitsu places, right? Like
Now,
jiu-jitsu school now, yeah.
not then, yeah.
But like, how lucky are we, and that we're so far ahead that if you're starting jiu-jitsu, you have all this. It's like a buffet. You could come in and be like, you know what? I really want to be in a highly competitive team. Boom. You
You
go to
have
this place, right? I want to be a little bit more self-defense oriented. There's a jiu-jitsu place for you. If you want to be competitive, if you want to be a really good hobbyist, if you're looking more for self-defense, like we have
We even
this.
got a
And
10th planet in Etobicoke, you know,
but
like
that you go to a place like what you're talking about, they're still where I was in 2000,
Yes,
right?
that's what I'm saying. It's like a time warp, right? So I understand what you're talking about because it was like it was strange for me because I don't know what that's like. I started 5 years ago, like 5.5 years ago. So wow, like you guys just train on your own, like a little terrorist cell over here, and nobody knows what you're doing. And the professor lives in another country, and they're coming in, and that's what happens in a lot of clubs in all over the world.
So, and the first wave of, the first wave of black belts, and I've spoken to some of them, they really had to, and you listen to their story, it's like they had to travel. They had to go to like Atlanta or New York or California. They were like, or Brazil, staying there, and there, I probably could have done that, but I had like a 3-year-old, right? Because I was teaching karate already full time, but I, like I could have probably like taken a month off, go to like California to like live for a month, live someone's mat.
Do an intensive,
Yeah, come back here, and could have done that, but I didn't want to be a,
That's what BJ Penn did, right? He just went down
and
there,
that's what a lot of the
lived there
guys,
2 years and just intense, like you
that's
did,
what
right?
a lot of the guys here in Canada did too, right? I just, a part of me that kind of thinks I should have done that too, but I wanted to be a good dad, that one out, so,
And you
and
wouldn't be, well, you would be somewhere else, but you wouldn't be where you are right now,
that's right,
right? So
Or I don't think it would change. I'd just be right where I am anyways,
maybe
right? I'd just
you
be
never
like,
know.
I just have more stripes on the belt, which means
Perhaps.
nothing, right? Like,
So you came, so then you kind of you got the blue belt kind of haphazardly, then you got it again from Steve Lin, you said.
From Steve Lin,
Okay.
and then training there. But because I taught karate full time, we're a full time dojo. We're open 7 days a week, and I taught 6 days a week, so I could only come at lunch. So I had to, like his lunch classes were, it was just building up, and
Like fundamentals.
and that's just the timing wasn't, like the time was like, it's weird. Like he started at like 12:30. I still remember he started at 12:30, but I didn't get home till 2:30. Yeah. And I have to be at work getting ready for the day at 3, right? So most of the times I just go home, shower, and go back, and I'd be exhausted. And so I found when I already had my own gym too, right? So I'm like, I can't be so exhausted because I'm just trying to start my own dojo. So my training kind of took a back seat. Then I found Gringo, and his lunch class was noon. And that 30 minutes.
That was an action reaction.
That action, yeah. And that 30 minutes really was like saving me a lot of time. Mm-hmm. But more than that was he had an open mat at 11, mm-hmm. right? Okay. And so I started going to the open mat. And that was like the first time where I was in a room full of like blue belts, purple belts, brown belts, and there were like 2 or 3 black belts. That was the first time where I was like, so I did a trial class, and then I found out there was there was colored belts in class, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, well, this is good. Let me try it out for a month. And then he said, you know, we do open training, like open training at 11. So I started open training, and like, I'm like, man, I'm in a room full of blue belts, purple belts, and brown belts. I'm like, I'm gonna get better, right? Sure. It's funny because Kevin Wheeler was in was at my gym, my dojo on Tuesday, and I made and I told this story, and this was what kind of made me start training with him and them. Like it was, I was like, I rolled with him, and I felt like I don't know what the hell's going on. Mm-hmm. I was like, what is happening? You know, I was like I was getting put into omoplatas from mount. I'm like, I didn't know this was a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so that was it. And that was kind of the first. Then I was like, I've been with Gringo ever since, with the action ever since. That was the first funny story because I made the. Yeah, so funny story. You know, first time I rolled with Kevin, I felt like I didn't know what was going on. And we were the same belt. Right.
You were both blue at the time?
We were both blue at the time, yeah. And I was like rolling with him, and I was like, I don't know what the hell's going on. And so, you know, but to me, that was like, then this is the right place, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't want to be the big fish beating everybody up because I'm not going to get any better, right? I needed people to be surrounded by people that were going to push me and beat me up and tap me out so that I get better. The funny story was on Tuesday, Kevin was at my dojo. And at the end of the class, I told the students, I'm like, guys, we're so lucky. I go, because there's only twice in my life where I was rolling with someone. And I was like, I should probably quit jiu-jitsu because I don't know what the heck's going on. You know, once was a blue belt and once was a purple belt. And I said, the two guys that made me feel that way are here, right? Yeah. You know, there's like, it was like Arthur and Kevin standing beside each other, right? So, that was when I started to really like train 4 or 5 days a week. It was at that point in 2010 when I started going to Gringo's, and he would have like 11 a.m. Open training, which became a 9:30 2-hour comp class before the lunch class. And then I was starting, like, that's when I picked it up. I was going Monday to Friday.
And you were still teaching full time.
Yeah, I was teaching full time. Yeah, yeah.
How'd you survive?
it was a tough room. So it was, Kevin, Michael Sheehan, who was at Toronto Jiu Jitsu Club.
Yeah, yeah, he's great.
You know, Gringo, of course, would be training with us. You know, Monkey would show up. You know, once in a while, Justin Bruckman would be there sometimes. Arthur started showing up. Mm-hmm. Pascal Arwin.
What belt was Arthur when you met him?
Purple.
Is it purple?
Yeah, yeah. So, Pascal would be there. Pascal, we would roll all the time. Arwin, mm-hmm. you know, was just like almost put me to sleep the first time I rolled with him with a loop choke. You know, he passive aggressive, a compliment when he put me in a loop choke and I was gurgling and he goes, oh, you have good defense. I was like, well, you know, turning my face blue is good defense. Then it's good. And then, you know, these guys, like I still train with Kevin when I can, with Pascal.
Arwin comes in quite
Arwin
often.
Arwin comes in often. He makes sure to come take my lunch class to give me my hard rounds. Arthur and I train we roll every Tuesday, Thursday. So, you know, it's good because, you know, like karate gave me lifelong friends, and jiu-jitsu's, you know, I've been doing it consistently for 15 years now, has given me the same thing, you know.
So when did you so eventually you know, I'm assuming you stayed there, obviously you kept training while still running in KS, and then when did you get your black belt?
So I got it in 2020.
Okay.
2020.
Well, yeah, like it's slower because you're running around back and forth, you're not.
No. It's you know, it's like, so I started, it was perfect, right? So I was already a blue belt when I went to Gringo in 2010, right? But a good 10 years, right? Because I felt like I had to start over again anyways. Because I wasn't consistent enough at that point, right? So 10 years, which is like kind of normal, right?
Yeah,
Like,
100%.
you know, and I got it in 2020, kind of in secret because of COVID,
I remember.
you know.
I met you right after you got it.
You know, Arwin and I, so, you know, there was a lockdown, and another one of my training partners, Brian Rafat, who just won pants, who just won pants, I think, yeah, pants in the master's level. You know, we were just getting antsy, right? Like
Sure.
March, what everything got closed down in March, and in April we were like, well, we can't not train. So Brian reached out, and then we started training just him and I, because we're following the things. And then Arwin found that we were roll like, and then Brian could only come, wow, twice a week. And then Arwin found that I was doing it, so he filled in the other twice a week,
Yeah,
right?
and then you have your full time.
And then so now I'm back to training. You know, for sure, like 1 hour is the same person, but these guys are like, you know, they're killers.
Sure.
And then afterwards, Brian went into a different cohort, right? Because just closer to his house.
Sure.
And then Arwin and I would just drill. We would just drill and then roll crazy.
Arthur came and started doing some
Yeah.
secret stuff too, which we,
Yeah.
again,
Well,
we talk about this
so
now,
yeah.
but you know.
So that was it. Like, so you know, I really credit Arwin with helping me get a black belt, and I guess vice versa, because we just had each other,
And you kept
right?
training, yeah.
And we kept training. And then we would and then when things would open, we'd just go back and we'd be sharp, right?
Well,
Because everybody else had their own little training,
or no
right?
training.
Or no training, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, come on, it's jiu-jitsu. Everybody found a way to train, right? But then whenever there was an opening allowed, we'd all meet up and we'd be sharp,
Yeah.
right? So, you know, and then finally December, Gringo called, just invited a few guys, I guess, who he decided was going to get a black belt, and did a shark tank for us, and then that was awarded as a black belt.
Yeah, well, interesting enough, that's exactly how the bunker started too. Like the difference was is that I was just a white belt. I didn't know anything, right? But we started, like, I only trained jiu-jitsu for like not even 4 months. Like I started in November of 2019. I was saying, we were talking about this in the earlier podcast with some of the other guys, with Ali. Ali was the OG with the bunker. And he was a blue belt then, and I was a white belt. And then, you know, I started in November, and then March, we're shut down. So I'm like, okay, what do I know? But I'm like, I don't want to stop this. So I just put out some mats at my church, like in a Sunday school classroom, right? Like these blue, you know, those gymnastics mats, the little crappy ones, right? I borrowed it from a friend of mine, this other girl who has a Muay Thai gym, right? And she's like, oh, I used to have a jiu-jitsu, actually, small world. She was one of my parishioners. And she runs a Muay Thai gym. And she, for a while, had a satellite group from Action Reaction that was renting out her place near Yorkdale Mall.
There you go, right? Because everyone was
And she,
always looking for their own,
no,
you
this is
know.
even before COVID,
Oh,
right?
okay, yeah.
And they were trying to start like a little satellite thing. Didn't pan out because it wasn't enough people there, right? She goes, oh, I have these mats in the
What's her name?
corner. Her name is Theodora Marino. And she, the place is called Hookup Muay Thai. And it's still there, and she's great. She's a Canadian champion, like, and her daughter's trained. And she goes, oh, I got these mats in the corner from when these jiu-jitsu guys used to come in and rent out my space. And I'm not doing it with them. You can take them. So I went and grabbed them and loaded them up. This white belt that knows nothing. I literally know nothing except, like, not even basics. And I put them in there, and, you know, I had Ali come in, these blue belts, and Dara, Smiley, and Ryan McKeever. Like, these are the three guys, right? And Phil Kress. I don't know if you met Phil.
I think I have.
CrossFit Phil, he's a cop. He's 56 now. I mean, he was Action Reaction for a long time, right? Yeah. And we were just trained, and we didn't know what we were doing, but you know, at least.
But that's the story. It's the same story as mine.
But
right?
The cool thing was is that Arthur, though, was my connection where I actually had actual, because Arthur was doing like some other secret training in another place.
Well,
And I got to go there.
Yeah.
So I would go do like the professional. I did a lot of privates during COVID with Arthur and a few other people, Shushel and all the other guys, right? Yeah. And so I would actually learn real stuff.
Yeah.
And then I could go to the bunker and try and practice where I learned from Arthur.
Yeah.
So it wasn't complete blind training, right? So after that whole year of like shut down, open, like you said, like there's a lot of people who didn't train at all.
Yeah.
Like even higher belts.
Yeah.
Like Panos, you know, Panos, like he was a purple belt and he didn't train for 2 years. And then he showed up and he was like, I'm out of shape, whatever, right? But we were sharp. Like,
but you we were sharp. I was lucky because I had my own dojo. So I had access, right? So I was able to open things up to some people, right? Mm-hmm. Get my little own satellite group going.
Yeah, we had the little cohorts.
Like I had Brian and then I had Arwin. And then, you know, Arthur and I had been training since for years before that, you know, but he had his little other group, right? And then every time we'd meet together to just, he would get antsy and he would call me. Like, he was really, like, trying to stick to the thing, right? Well, but he would call me and he would get antsy and he goes, hey, you want to roll? And I was like, yeah, let's roll.
And that's how I met you because I would do some privates with Arthur at NKS, right? But yeah, like, he was trying to keep everybody, like, in the same training partners,
that's right?
Small groups, which is good.
Like, well, and that's how the program started too, right?
Sure, yeah.
Because then it was, we would do secret training, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and because we would be like, I had just spent like tens of thousands renovating the place and it sat empty, right?
Yeah.
And then so what, we like took like 20 people, you know, a little bit more than what they recommended. We 20 people training. You know, like at the dojo.
So that's when you decided to do when did you decide to kind of add NKS BJJ?
Like, so, you know, I was like purple belt and some of my karate guys would want to do jiu-jitsu. So I just very casually would just roll. I'd show them, clean things up, very basic stuff. And as a brown belt, I sort of started to, I had one class as a brown belt. I'm like, okay, I'll teach one class. I didn't really feel like,
it wasn't the official.
Was kind of like, I mean, those guys are still training with me, except for the guys that went to university. You know, they'll hopefully be my first black belts. But, you know, so I had guys that would train every Friday. We just train after the karate class. We'd train and it'd be like proper training. I'd do technique and then we'd roll. But I just didn't want to, you know, I was a brown belt. And at that time, there were already a lot of gyms.
Yes.
There was a lot of brown black belts already. So I didn't want to advertise that I taught classes because I'm like, you could go to a legitimate black belt, right?
Sure
I was a good brown belt, but it's still a brown belt, right? Like, you want to learn, if you're coming from outside, want to learn, you should go to a black belt, go to a proper gym, right? But I was happy to just teach my karate students jiu-jitsu. And then COVID happened. And also, like, you know, like I had 550 students, karate students.
Yeah, well,
like, where was I going to put like a jiu-jitsu class? You know, people were telling me like, oh, you got to do jiu-jitsu, you got to do jiu-jitsu. And I'm like, I want to take out a karate class of 60 people to replace it with a jiu-jitsu class with 4 people, right? And then I have to wait to build it up.
Sure.
So, you know, but mostly it was just like, I was just a brown belt. And then COVID happened. So COVID happened, and then, you know, we had our little group that Arthur brought in his students. He needed a place. He was getting antsy. He wanted to teach. He wanted to train.
Yeah.
I had a couple of my guys. So I was just like, I had the space, and Arthur and I had known each other. I'm like, let's just do it here. No one's using the place. You know, and then by the time everything was opened up, we were allowed to open up.
Yeah.
I was starting from kind of not starting.
I guess we got a program though.
Yeah, like, well, like now it was like, now, okay, now I can fit it in because I was basically starting my schedule from, you know, you lost a lot of students. Thankfully, a very loyal students, a lot of them stayed, but I was able to move my schedule around to add in.
Yeah, it freed up a little bit of space.
Yeah, and time. So I was, and then, so that was like, what, 2020, 2021 officially.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, and then we built it up and like, we got about, I don't know, 80 jiu-jitsu students, 80, 100 students. Yeah, so that's how it started, you know. It kind of started accidentally,
Yeah.
you know.
Well, it's interesting how the pandemic kind of like there's good that came out of it as well,
Yeah, totally.
right?
Yeah,
Like,
that was one of the few good things that came out of it was it allowed me to sort of kind of like it opened up an opportunity to add this program in. You know, and it's like packed class, you see.
yeah.
You know, like not packed like other places. That's full-time jiu-jitsu because it's still part-time jiu-jitsu.
Still pretty full
Yeah.
for the space that you have, which is a pretty big space.
Yeah.
You have a pretty big space, but like it's busy.
Yeah.
It's busy. Thank God. Like it's yeah, that's good. And yeah, like you said, like what's like how many you still have like a ton of karate students. Like how many karate students do you
Well,
have?
it's still 4-to-1.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's yeah, of course, it's the main thing. But yeah, the jiu-jitsu program is pretty strong. It's going strong, thank God. And hopefully, it will get bigger for you, and you'll have to be faced
Yeah.
with the fact that you have to expand.
Yeah, next up is really doing the same thing to a kids program. So right now I'm like the kids program, I'm kind of hesitant to do kids program. It's just like okay, the kids doing karate that are 9, 10, 11, they should also do jiu-jitsu. So then there's a jiu-jitsu class for them, right? And then they have a friend that wants to do jiu-jitsu, okay. But I'm not really
Pushing it.
pushing it yet. You know, I want to make sure I do it properly. Like I don't do things, you know, it's like the NKS, the Northern Karate thing is, you know, has to be done properly. It's serious. Like it's not like a casual thing where you walk in and you know, it's just like, no, once you, it's, you know, we would like to do things professionally, meaning
Sure.
it's like, you know what you're going to get, right? It's
So it's
not
also
just,
highly structured. It's a chain,
yeah. So
right? There's support.
I want to make sure it's like if I start a kids class, there's like a pathway. There's a pathway for them to improve. There's a pathway to them from like when they're like 9 and 3 years later, they're 13. What's going to happen? Is there
So
a,
there's
you
a
know,
gap. There's a
there's
bridge going
exactly.
into the adulthood.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is I find a problem in a lot of dojos that you can have a lot of kids programs, and then there's that weird age,
Yeah.
the 13 to 16 age,
Yeah.
where a lot of dojos don't have a good, like I guess you could say, transition
Yeah.
program. How do you transition them from your adolescence to
Yeah.
adulthood, right?
Yeah. So I
It's
want to make
hard,
sure that I
right?
have that before.
And you lose a lot of kids at that
Yeah.
age, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, they get discouraged, right? Because then they're coming in, they've been doing it, and now either they're 13, they're good, right? But maybe for the past 6 months, they're big fish, small pond, right?
Yes.
And now they're going to roll a 20-year-old. You know, who might have only 6 months experience, but it's enough to overpower them, right? And you don't want them to feel, or might not be, right? Some of these 13-year-old, 14-year-old competitors are freaking, you know, like they're learning things that I'm just like learning now as well, right?
Yes.
Like,
Yeah.
you know, it's the future is bright.
Yeah, because the whole sport is moving
Yeah,
so quickly and evolving.
no.
And also the proliferation of like the internet, which is good and bad, right?
Yeah.
Like, people, I'm not saying they should be learning everything off the internet, but they're exposed to it.
That's right. Yeah.
They have a YouTube, they have all these
Yeah.
things, they're watching these instructionals,
Yeah.
they're asking.
Yeah, you know what that's good for is, you know, you look at it, you study it, and then you should ask your professor. But not the fancy stuff. You know, we always laugh at YouTube technique, right? But you know, you should use it to inspire you. You know, like to inspire what kind of game you want to play, right? You know,
But
like you
take your
would,
time, though.
yeah, like if you
You
watch,
gotta
like
take your
say the,
time.
if you watch the AOJ, you kind of have to look for just the small details they're doing, not learn it, not like, oh, I see this, you know, like this move and I'm going to copy it. And then you're doing it all wrong anyways, and then you're developing bad habits. But, you know, you should be looking at the small little details, like, oh, Rafa Mendes is doing this, he's stapling this way. You know, those are the things I think watching short YouTube shorts is good for. You're
Yeah,
looking for the
yeah.
small, like the, like you know, my karate teacher Hanshi Borkowski, he always says, for those things, you're looking, it's like mining for gold, right? You're looking, you're like, you're mining for gold, but you get like a small little nugget,
Yeah,
right?
and the
And
problem
that's
is when you're new, though, you also don't know what gold is. Like, you don't know what you don't know, right? Like,
Yeah, but you know, like
So if, you need if the guidance of your senses,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. If you can read, if you take anything from this, it's more like you can look at it, you know, and then ask your professor, ask your sensei,
yeah,
you know, like, can you teach this to me, right?
Rather there's a balance. There's a balance because, like, yeah, when you're eager, everybody, like,
yeah,
I went through it, like, we all go through it. You're eager and you don't know, like, you think you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I want to do this. And it's like, well, then the professor's trying to tell you, well, you're asking basically to do calculus, but you don't know basic
math.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I've rolled with so many, you know, and like, we invite guests sometimes. You know, I've rolled with a lot of like colored belts who are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's like so much work to just pass their guard. Right. But once you pass their guard, they don't know basic escape. So now you could just, you know, now
holes
it's like,
in the game.
Yeah,
in the game. Yeah,
like now it's just like, okay, now it's just like, okay, it's going to be a slow death, right? Because they, you neglect those fundamentals because they're not as fun, right? Like, you know, learning how to escape side control isn't fun,
yes,
right? But, you know, someone's going to slice through your guard. If it's not one guy, it's going to be someone else.
Everyone
you better learn,
passes,
right?
Passes your guard.
You know, so it's like, I often find that now it's like, it's so hard to pass someone's guard, but once you do, they, you know, oftentimes they're focusing on the calculus,
mm-hmm,
right? That they couldn't do basic math when they need it. In your analogy,
yeah, 100%. Like I see it, like, yeah, everywhere and different. Of course, different gyms are different, right? Like different dojos are going to emphasize different things. Depends on the professor.
Yeah,
some professors are more comfortable doing guards. Some people, yeah, like, okay, most black belts are pretty proficient in a lot of things, right? Mm-hmm. But everybody has their strengths, right?
Yeah, and their specialty, yeah.
Yeah, so somebody, you know, some people are going to emphasize guard, some people are going to emphasize top game, some people are going to emphasize judo, like maybe they have a judo background,
yeah, yeah,
right? And so you're going to have gaps
in the
game, but that's still good though. But like, that's why, like, I know the touchy subject, which I'm going to bring up right now because, yeah, I don't care. Because my podcast, I can talk about what I want. You know, no, because like in the jiu-jitsu community, you have this big thing about cross training, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, you know, some people don't care.
Yeah.
They encourage it. And some people really don't like it. Right. And there's a lot of different reasons. We're not going to get into the reasons.
Yeah.
Right. Sometimes it's, you know, ego. Sometimes it's business. Sometimes whatever. Right.
Sometimes it's just protecting your students.
Yeah.
Too,
yeah.
100%.
Right?
You don't want them to get hurt.
100%. But I'm a big proponent of cross training. Why? Because, again, like, it doesn't matter how good your environment is.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, I was at Rev for like 5 years. Wonderful people.
Yeah.
Nice friends. Right. You know, I recently switched because of work and all this kind of stuff, right? And now I'm at JD6.
Mm-hmm.
Really hard to leave that environment because I love those people, right?
Yeah.
And you grow with them, right? But what is the downside of that? You get used to the same people,
yeah,
over and over again.
Yeah.
You know their game.
Yeah.
They know your,
yeah,
game. You can become a little complacent,
yeah,
right? It's like, eh, you know, I know how to defend against this guy because he always does the same thing. They know what I'm going to do, right?
Yeah.
But when you cross train, even like maybe like, maybe not everywhere, but like you go to open mats,
mm-hmm,
you visit other places, then like you said, like suddenly it's like, oh, there's all these other guys playing a completely different game,
yeah,
and I'm,
yeah,
getting destroyed.
Yeah.
So it exposes your weaknesses, right?
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, you get frustrated, but at the same time, like my kids, my three kids all train jiu-jitsu. And they've all had one environment, right? Now,
yeah,
they're in a new environment.
Yeah.
And my kids are saying to me, oh, daddy, you know, it's like, these kids are really good.
Yeah.
Like the new kids, right?
Yeah.
Not to say that the other kids weren't good.
But they were used to that.
Different games.
Yeah,
yeah, of,
yeah,
course, right? Different games, right? So like now they're at a different dojo. And now these kids, they play a different game.
Mm-hmm.
And my kids are like, well, the my own kids are recognizing gaps in their game.
Yeah.
Which is good. Because I'm like, okay.
Now you
got to fix it.
Yeah.
You got to plug those gaps and you become a well-rounded individual, right? So, yeah, I don't know, like, and that's why COVID, again, going back to COVID, it's like, it was a blessing because training in different places and with different people,
yeah,
at least for me, I don't know, I can't talk about my own game because it's hard to talk about your own thing,
yeah,
right? But I find that it helped me a lot. It helped me a lot in my game. It helped me a lot in, like, competition. It helped me a lot in, like, just generally general appreciation for jiu-jitsu, right?
Yeah.
Because it's humbling, right? It teaches you, like, what you don't know.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm in favor of cross training for that reason.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I could play a little bit of the devil's,
sure,
advocate,
100%,
too, right? Like, I think it's important if you're a competitor, you know, you should be, right? Because you don't want to get complacent.
Yes.
And just get used to this, you know, like the timing. You know, you get used to your training partner's favorite go-to moves. You get used to their pressure. You get used to their timing. So yeah, like definitely as a competitor, you probably have to, I would think, but as a hobbyist, like if you're just a doctor and you're a surgeon, I don't know if you should be doing that because you need your hands to work tomorrow,
100%.
right?
Yeah, you get
You
hurt.
know, if you're a lawyer and you need a you have to be in court tomorrow, you can't be showing up with a black eye,
Well, if you're a
right?
priest, dude,
Yeah. You know,
I
but
can't get
to
hurt
yeah,
either.
but to that, and you know that this is what we do
Yeah.
at NKS is, like we know enough people that we invite people that we can trust,
Yes.
right? You know, that will give our own students a run for their money. But we know that they're respectful,
Yes.
right? You know, we know that Arthur and I won't have to mat and force anybody guests, case an example, I'm not going to say, but we had like eight people show up on Tuesday because they're prepping for the from another gym that are friends of ours that are
Prepping for the open.
prepping for the open. You know, they show up, they contacted us and they were like, we know, hey, we want to train with you guys. We're prepping for the open. We want to go train for you guys. And for Arthur and I, we were like a little nervous. We were excited, nervous because we were going to roll with guys we didn't know. Yeah, so we had we had some guest people coming in on Tuesday. They reached out to us, and two guys that has been there before who are big time competitors, they wanted to train with us. And we were like, yeah. And they were like, can we bring some guys? And
What
we're like,
guys?
yeah. Well, first, what guys, right?
What
I mean,
guys?
we're like, you know the rules. You guys, if you want to train with us, you guys know the rules, right? And we take care of each other, right? There's no NKS belt that you're gonna win, right? Like, we're here to learn. So they come. We get people like like when there's a big tournament, we get people to request to come and train with us. But going back to cross training, right? It's like it's great. Like, I have a very good relationship with Nick Reyes, your new professor, right? He's such an amazing guy, right? Like, a lot of his guys come to
Yes.
NKS, and he's very supportive of that. But it's good because it gives my guys too, like without having to go anywhere, it gives my guys a good idea of where they're at, right?
Yes.
And vice and on the other end of that, like I'm missing my roles tonight, so I might go to JT6 tomorrow and train with Nick, right? Just to get my role in, right? So it's good. Like And I think the community in some ways good like that,
Yeah, I think the benefits outweigh the negatives.
Like tomorrow, like I'm not like because you tempted me with a cigar and bourbon today. So I told Arthur, I'm like, I can't roll today. I have a confessional with my priest. He knew what was happening, and but I at least I don't get to miss training, right?
Yes.
Like tomorrow, I can go to 6:30. I might hit up JT6 with you. Arwin might come for my lunch class, and I'll get my role there. And if that doesn't happen, I just Nick's a phone a message away. I'd be like, hey Nick, can I? Well, it's an open mat, so
Sure.
right? So
Yeah.
it's good.
Well, this is why we kept the bunker going too, right? Like, because it's people you trust. Because the bunker was not just Rev people. It was some NKS guys. Christian was coming in, like the different guys, and it was nice because, but it was only people that we trusted. Because you don't want to, no one's ever gotten hurt in the bunker, thank God. And like, I
And it's
remember,
for a good cause, right? It's like,
yeah,
that's
but even
why, like,
before we started what I mean is even before we started the tournament, like we were just doing even after we opened, we still had that room, the little mini dojo, the bunker, right? And we were training weekly, like in addition to our classes. People would come by like during the day when they were off work or they had time, and we would roll, right? Sometimes it was
That's
three guys,
awesome.
sometimes it was two guys, sometimes it was four guys, like in midday, right? And then at night we would still go to our classes, right? And it was great because we could work out certain things. It was like a little lab. But yeah, with the competition, yeah, it's exactly that. It's like this past year, the last one we did, it was four different dojos, right? It was Rev, it was NKS, it was JT6, and it was also for the first time Gracie Humeita Bolton. And the only reason why we invited those people is not to be exclusive or anything. It's just we know who they are.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we know they're not going to kill each other. And we, and it's a kind of us, and Arthur really likes it because it's like, it's a safe environment for blue belts who have never competed before.
Yeah.
It's to a kind good, of like test themselves, but they're not afraid.
Yeah. Just to see if they want to, if they want to keep, continue. And it was a good, it was you just can't do it when, you know, you always do it when I do my karate black belt.
Well, this year, I told you this year.
So thank you for not for making sure that it's,
you better
it's
be later. There. Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's going to be,
because, but you know, I only never make it because it's,
I know,
you know, I have other responsibilities.
100%. But this year I did it late so that it would not interfere just for you. But I have to say, and I want to thank you again, like officially, I know I've thanked you many times, but you and Nick Reyes, but like, and Arthur, like, but especially you, like, part of the community, right? It's like, you know, I'm not a member of NKS. I wasn't a member of JT6 at the time when I was planning the last bunker. And, you know, you're like, hey, do you need help? Do you need anything? And you guys, you know, you guys donated for the new mats. JT6 donated for the new mats, you know, Flawless Kimonos, you know, Jeff Santos, right? He's over at Action Reaction. He's another black belt now. You know, and they, everyone just stepped up.
He's another guy that helped me through.
Yeah, phenomenal.
Through COVID, because it's funny because I had like, I belonged into a cohort, but like three cohorts. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of
like,
course. Yeah. But you're just like wonderful people, and I want to thank you because, you know, like you didn't have to do that.
You know, but it's, you know, it's like, it's everybody wins, right? You know, because like my guys were able to participate. You know, guys that didn't really want to compete, but they want to compete, but they're not sure. And it was a good way for them to get their feet wet, you know? And, you know, and I watch it, you know, and like, and, you know, our, so who was my guys? Frank
was there.
And Kalen, right?
Yep.
Did Evan, and was there another one?
Evan was there.
Because like my main guys are, my main competitor, there's Grace.
But Grace was a purple.
Grace
so she
is
wasn't.
A purple, but my blues are Frank, Mateo,
yeah,
Evan, Kalen, and Paul. But I think only Frank and Kalen participated in that one. And they were killing it until they weren't, right? And but it was silly mistakes. It was like stupid mistakes, right?
They were killing it.
They were killing it until they weren't, right? Which was good because, you know, we have a very casual, like most gyms do, you know, although I don't refer to us as a gym, it's a dojo. I make sure the students know that. They were killing it until they weren't, but it gives us something to work on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we did the provincials, we did quite well, but you know, with like Arthur and I were able to see the gaps where everybody was, were made, like, you know, the mistakes was pretty similar across the board. So it gave us a lesson, like what we needed to focus on in terms of like structuring the lesson for the next 2, 3, 4 months.
Yeah.
Right. So it's good in that way.
Yeah. And I think we're going to keep it like it's a blue, we made it into a blue belt.
Yeah.
Cause the first 2 years it was a mixed belt.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, the first year was just jokes inside the
dojo. Yeah. It was just for fun.
At the church, there was 8 guys. Yeah. And the second year, even though it was bigger, it was still
this
mixed
is what,
belts.
This is going into the fourth year now?
Yeah. So then the third one, I made it just blue. Just because I realized that it was getting so big.
Yeah.
Okay, so big, 16 competitors.
Plus but the, you know what? The next one is 32.
Well, I don't. Right? I don't want to go.
No,
higher.
But you know, like, yeah, it's like
I don't want to go bigger.
It's exponential.
It's intimate enough.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And believe it or not, 16 competitors is enough to organize.
It's and you're, it's not your whole day, right?
It's a nice evening
out. I like the last time what you did. You had chairs out. Tables.
Yeah, it's right? like a who's number one. Yeah. You know, like we want to maybe get some food next time.
Yeah.
For fun, you know, maybe some drinks. And we also added the female division. So we had, we had 8 females.
Yeah.
And that was good. But, you know, it's just enough, I think.
Yeah.
And I don't want to make it bigger, but I want to keep it at blue because it's a good entry level. Blue, it's interesting enough.
Yeah.
But it's also not crazy white belts like killing each other.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll do some super fights in the future. Mm. Some people are like, oh, can we get some purple belts or some black belts or some brown belts?
Yeah.
Throw in like 1 or 2 super fights just for fun at the beginning or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Or at the end. So we'll see. But we'll keep it going. And as long as I can do it and I have the space for it.
Yeah. And it's a good time of the year, even though it sucks for me. But, you know, it's a good way to end the year, right? It's a lot of times it's people ending the year. Yeah.
Well, you know, we're coming up to the hour mark. And I guess the last question I have for you is that, you know, like where, you know, you've been doing this for a while now. Where do you see the NKS BJJ program going in the future? Like, you see it, you see it kind of staying as the same? Do you want to expand it? Like, what do you, without giving too much away of your plans, I guess you could say?
You know,
what would you like to see, I guess, in the future?
You know, just continued steady growth.
Okay.
You know, highly technical students, you know, that enjoy being with us and see value in what we offer. You know, I, you know, start a kids program, you know, and, you know, and maybe, have some of the other NKS Northern Karate schools, help them grow their program too. Like I know my friend Vito,
they want to start BJJ programs.
Yeah. So they, you know, there's two that, there's, two that, actually have their head instructors also do jiu-jitsu.
Okay.
Right. So my, my buddy Vito, who, him and his wife as well, like me and my wife run his dojo at Maple. He's got a jiu-jitsu program.
Okay.
You know, and, you know, just kind of just do the same thing with karate, but probably at a smaller scale because, you know, like, you know, I love karate, man, you know, and I love teaching it, you know, and jiu-jitsu is sort of like the side hustle, so to speak, right? You know, but yeah, you know, just like steady growth, like, you know, of like-minded students. You know, we love our crew now, you know, and just slowly add the same sort of type of build that community, you know, and then get a kids program started. So that's where I see it. That's where I see it. That's where I see it going.
Do you find that, sorry, one more question.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you find that because you have the established karate program, so that's kind of like your bread and butter, I guess you could say, you know, it's your main business, right?
And like, it's what I do. Yeah.
Yeah. It's what you do. Yeah. It's the main thing, right?
It's what I'm, it's what I'm good at. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the 90%, I guess, or 80% of your business, whatever. Do you find that that is like an added bonus because you're not dependent solely on the jiu-jitsu program, that you, it allows you the freedom to be more eclectic and to focus more on quality over quantity?
100%. Okay. You know, like, again, this thing, well, you know, I mean, it kind of started because, you know, Arthur and I were, you know, yeah, we were training partners, but he was really the one who was helping me shape my game, showing me the techniques, telling me where my holes were, telling me what I was working on. You know, I do some privates with him, you know, and it was just easier because, like, I like training at Action, it's a tough room.
Yes.
It's a tough room.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes after a training session, I'd come and I just have no energy to give to my students, you know, so, you know, selfishly kind of started this program as well so that I could train.
Yes.
Right. So in that sense, yes, you know, because, I, you know, I don't have to, you know, there's a lot of, for lack of better words, there's some meatheads that come like that, that, that are, attracted to jiu-jitsu, right? You know, so there's been a lot of times where we've like, we've told people that we're not the right place for them, you know, because you could just feel like they're just gonna, they just want to hurt somebody, right? So in that sense, yes, you know, we're a lot more careful of who gets to join, or who gets to be part of us.
Yeah, and I like that. Like personally, like it's just one of those things where, don't get me wrong, I get it. It's a business too, right? You got to live.
Yeah.
And that's, I can only imagine how hard it is to kind of balance.
Oh yeah, like yeah, no, exactly. Like
what, the quality, you said, over like, the quantity, you know, right?
Yeah, like in anything, whether it's jiu-jitsu, karate, Muay Thai, whatever, you know, like, but
you want to make a, you need to make money. You have a family. You need to support them. You need to do all these things, but at the same time, you want to make sure that the product you're producing is high quality, right?
That's
at least for a reputation.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and like we have, so, you know, we have an amazing reputation. Like we have amazing karate students, you know, who are really, really good, you know, are really skilled and really knowledgeable.
Yeah.
So actually, if you ask me where I see the jiu-jitsu program going, I just want to mirror it, you know, with like everyday people who can be good at jiu-jitsu. You know, what we were good at is, you know, everyday people. We could take everyday, like people who are maybe not the most athletic, we can make them really amazing at karate, you know, and we want to do the same thing for jiu-jitsu.
Sure.
Make it accessible to everybody where everybody can feel like, whether it takes them 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, but they see a path to gaining the skills to become a good black belt.
Yeah, to be a good black belt. Yeah. This is the thing, right? I want to be a black belt one day, but I want to be a good black belt. Because there's a lot of bad ones. Just because there's so many.
Yeah, I mean, I might be a bad one.
Yeah. No, I don't think you're bad. Well, what do I know? But I don't think you are. But yeah, because there's John Danahar was talking about this on Lex Friedman once. He was like saying,
oh, yeah.
Lots of black belts out there.
Yeah.
Most of them are not very good.
Yeah.
He goes, just because you have a black belt, okay, a lot of places you put in your time, eventually you're going to get a black belt.
Yeah.
But you want to have students that you're proud of.
Yeah.
That you can
trust.
But
that's the thing, right? Like, if you want it, if you say it's for everybody, you know, like,
it is
what
for
does
everybody.
That mean? Right?
Yeah, what does it mean? But if you put in the time and the effort as an instructor and you love your students and you know, the word is like, if you cultivate them.
Yeah, and you don't want to give them false confidence, being like, I'm a black belt. And then, you know, but their skill is not that. Right?
Yes.
It has to match that. It has to match.
Of course.
It has to match. The skill has to be there. The skill has to be present, you know, and so any... That's what I want, where it's like everybody is, that's a black belt is what you would think a black belt is.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we have on the karate side. It's what we want.
But eventually. That takes time too. That's the thing. It takes time.
Yeah.
It takes effort on your end.
Yeah.
Okay. Of course, on the student's end, they have to work hard, but it takes time as a professor, as a sensei to like cultivate, because a lot of times like,
well, all you have, honestly, you just
need to put in the effort.
It is hard.
In the student.
It takes
yeah.
time, but you just have to care.
Yeah. Yeah, because if everyone's just a number, then it's like, well, okay. I've seen a lot of students, like a lot of jiu-jitsu guys who they're really good or they have like a natural talent, but maybe like they never received any type of, not attention, attention's not the word, although that's part of it, but maybe like their particular instructor never saw anything in them or maybe,
care, right?
Or, like, they didn't care.
You know, the way Arthur and I do it is it's like if we see a mistake, we correct it right away, right? Or I roll with my students. I don't want to speak for some instructors because I don't know. But when I roll with my students, I roll to see where they're at.
Yes, of course.
That's how I roll with my students, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I try. And if they're getting better, I turn it up, right? And but I'm just look. When I'm rolling with my students, I'm looking. What I'm really doing is I'm trying to structure the next set of lessons that we have to work on. It's like, okay, you know what? Everybody's guard retention, or, you know, like I rolled with, you know, five of my blue belts today. And like, you know, the guard retention isn't that great. Right. Mm-hmm. So we're going to work on guard retention for the next couple of time. Right. Or so, okay. Everyone's passing is slipping. So it's like, okay, let's tidy that up.
You're going to build that up.
Yeah. So that's why I roll with my students, you know, but I got to tell you, man, they're getting good.
But that's a good problem to have.
Right? Yeah.
But even individual ones who stand out, like I like it how you give opportunities to students of yours who show promise. Well, you give them responsibility too, right? So it's like you get like different people. We're not gonna say names, but you know, some of your good students. You know, you tell them, okay, I'm gonna give you a beginner class. I'm gonna get you to teach. You know what I mean? Because I want you to cultivate that part.
Yeah.
I mean, they're interested in that. You know.
Yeah. I mean, one of my senseis, my first karate sensei, was he always told me to teach is to learn again.
Yes, 100%. 100%. Like, you know, having to teach in a class.
Yeah. And I actually, sorry to stop you, but, you know, like Arthur was asking me, he goes, do you think this has helped you? I'm like, I think outside of, it's helped me a lot. Mm-hmm. Teaching has helped me a lot, you know, because I see the holes in my game and I see the things that, like, you know, like when I'm teaching something and I did, same thing that happened with karate, my karate improved so much when I started teaching, because then I'm covering details that maybe I wasn't doing. Yeah. So when I'm teaching, you know, I have to cover details that maybe I'm missing doing myself in a role, or a student asks me, and then I cover that detail, and I have to make sure I'm doing it. I'm setting the example, right? Yeah. So when we'll take for karate, for example, like, you know, if I tell my students, it's like, you have to chamber your kick, you have to pivot your leg, you have to turn your hip, I got to be doing those things.
Right? 100%.
And so now I'm translating that to jiu-jitsu as well. So, you know, teaching has really helped me a lot because I have to make sure that I'm not just preaching, but I'm also doing.
Well, when you're a student, right? You're only responsible to
yourself.
Yeah, yeah, mostly.
Yeah, and to your training partner.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
But you're responsible to yourself. Right, yeah. You know, you screw up in a competition, for example, or in you know, or in a demonstration. Okay, it's on you,
yeah,
and it affects you negatively. But when you're a teacher in anything in life, yeah, and you screw up, you're basically perpetuating that mistake in multiple
That's
students.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
In a whole generation, I know this. Yeah. I teach. Okay,
yeah.
I teach theology at the university. Whatever,
yeah,
same thing.
But as a priest, you have to live by example too, right?
Yeah, 100%. And if you're preaching whatever, well, you have to know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
if you make
yeah,
mistakes,
yeah,
now like 1,000 people just heard you,
yeah,
and they think because he's a priest, let's say, or because you are a sensei, yeah, he knows, and therefore yeah, they're going to go and they're going to perpetuate that mistake.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the damage is worse.
That's right. Yeah.
Down the road,
yeah,
right?
So I have to be yeah, very, you
very
know,
careful.
And so even when I roll now, you know, I've been much more relaxed,
mm-hmm,
right? But with an emphasis on like more technical, because I have to make sure it's being done properly and I'm doing these moves properly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, on that, I think yeah, that's a good place to wrap yeah, up.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. I really appreciate your time.
Well, and also thank you for the bourbon and for the cigar.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, that's yeah, fine. that's a pleasure yeah, off the mats and off the podcast. But thank you for everything you do for the community. Thank you for being a good friend. Thank you for being
thank
a good
you,
instructor. I appreciate everything you've done for me and for all of us, you know, like yeah, those who are NKS and those who are not NKS.
Yeah.
And, you know, look forward to learning many more things from you. And hopefully in the upcoming bunker tournament, we're going to have some more. Maybe NKS guy is going to take home the trophy
yeah,
this time.
No, I want to. Yeah,
I have a feeling. I have a feeling. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu podcast. Feel free to follow us on Instagram and YouTube. And if you want to reach out with any questions or if you're interested in being on the show, feel free to email us at bunkerjiu-jitsu@gmail.com.